Hi, my name's Hubert Vogt, but everyone knows me as Bucky.
Bucky! Yeah. You don't have to ask a single fucking question now. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Bucky.
All right.
Rock the mic, Bucky.
What was your
real name?
Hubert.
Bucky.
All right, I think movies in, the past few years, just, the quality of them is going way downhill.
Because of me?
No. But you should.
Is that what you're getting at? Because I feared that myself.
No. What do you think about that, and what do you do as a filmmaker to make sure you make a quality flick, dude?
I think as soon as I got into the game, everything went to hell. There was a guy, a director that made a movie called George Washington. Did anyone see it? That's about nine. In the paper, the dude said somebody was saying, there are filmmakers who came before you, like Kevin Smith, that helped pave the way and stuff like that. And he went off on a tear. And he was just like, look, that dude lowered the bar. You know, he didn't really make it easier for us to get in. He just turned filmmaking into a kind of Special Olympics. Which I couldn't be too mad at, because I thought it was kind of a funny line. It was like, I'm leading the way of the handy capable, you know? So that dude insisted that I lowered the bar, and I gave that a good thought, a good think or two when I first read that comment. I was like, did I lower the bar? Like, did I get in and really fuck it up? Like, did it all go south with me? And I thought, no. Because, come on, nobody's really seen the movies I've done.
Hi, my name's Tim Rowland, and aesthetically speaking, all your films, there's been some criticism, you know, as to camera movement and, you know, something.
Oh, we're talking about the movies?
Yeah, the movies.
I thought you were like, aesthetically speaking.
It's hard for me to say
that. You gotta lose some fucking weight.
But I know you worked with Robert Yeoman on Dogma, I think it was. And I was just wondering if there's any future plans to maybe have a different look, maybe to your films?
No, not essentially. I don't think I have a look per se. I mean, I think the look is kind of dictated by what the movie's about. But I don't really have a style per se. Like, I remember the first thing I read about our work in the legitimate press was in the Village Voice. Amy Taubman wrote this mini review of Clerks when it first played at the 1993 Independent Feature Film Market. And she said, his style is that he has no style. And I said, yeah. So I just adopted that. And I figured, all right, that's my style. Like, I just don't have a style. You just can't look at it. Sometimes people look at a Tim Burton movie, like that's Tim Coen Brothers especially. You look at a movie with no credits, you'll find out if it's the Coen Brothers just by the way they move their camera and shit. Martin Scorsese, same thing. But mine, not at all. Mine, you can close your eyes and listen only, and then you'd be like, oh, it's that guy's movies. Because somebody said, fucking cocksmoker. I've never been that big into the visual aspect of it, and I get tagged for it a lot, and I think that's because I bring it up a lot. I'm one of those people that believes in the philosophy of steal the thunder. Say something negative about yourself before somebody else has the chance to. So if I'm like, look, my movies look like shit, then there are people who are like, well, he knows. And because I tend to do that a lot, people just kind of go into every movie. Some of the critics, like Variety, when they reviewed Jane Bob Strike Back, they were like, no, it was Hollywood Reporter, Kirk Honeycutt, said, it's a Kevin Smith movie, so of course, you know, it doesn't look good. And I thought that was kind of unfair because that movie looked wonderful compared to everything else we did. But I don't know. I just don't feel the need to develop a visual style.
Thanks.
I'm just lazy, dude. It takes too much work.
How much leeway do you give your actors? Like, you write a line for Jay over here, and he starts rambling, and do you just cut him, or do you say, let him go, and then see how it came out? And, I mean, all the actors you deal with.
Is it like that?
Ramble, no.
Mike.
There's no rambling. Usually we go over it beforehand. Like, I'll say a few things. He'll be like, fuck that. No, stick to that. And then I'll be like, can I smoke in the scene? He'll be like, no. I'm always trying to smoke in the scene, just so I can smoke. But no, it's not like that.
How is it?
It's like I said.
You stated the script?
I add some stuff, but I do it before we start shooting. And sometimes I'll throw like one word in or something.
I add some shit. Every once in a while I put in a word.
A word or two. But no, I pretty much stick to the script. He wants me to stick to the script. It's fun.
I'm fairly dictatorial with him and with the other guys as well. Him, though, I tend to be even more guarded with. Because there's a line, a very thin line that character has to walk. Because they're very offensive, could be potentially very offensive, but for some reason winds up being very sweet. And my theory about that has always been because, like Jason himself, the character has no moral barometer whatsoever. Like, doesn't say things to hurt people, doesn't say things to be mean, just says them because he has no fucking clue. Good or bad. But he came up with a bit of business in the last movie. Muse, with every movie, Muse has grown better and better. Like in the first movie, I wrote the script and I wrote it to his intonations, his inflections, some of his catchphrases, and handed it to him and said, read it. And he read it. I said, what do you think? He's like, I don't know if I can do this. And I was like, it's fucking you. And so we spent a month teaching Jay how to be Jay. So it's like, Snoogans. He's like, why would I say that? I'm like, why do you say that? But with each movie, it got better and better. Like in the first movie, there's a scene where we dance outside the convenience store. We're shooting, it's 3 in the morning, in the middle of Leonardo, fucking dead. There's 4 people on the crew. Me, Scott Mosier, Dave Klein, the DP, and I think Ed was still there.
Yeah.
Ed was still there at that point. And we're about to do this sequence where we just kind of break into dance from the store. And Muse is like, I can't do it. I said, why? And he's like, it's just all these people. And this is the kind of dude who, if you know him for 5 minutes, he'll just like take his cock out. The kind of dude you're driving with and like you're looking ahead and then you hear him go like, it's chilly in here, isn't it? And you look over him like he's crazy and he's got his cock and his balls hanging out and he's leaning back looking at you. He's like a baby, like when a baby discovers their genitalia, they're just wee. So, but here he was, you know, not dancing. And I was just like, what are we supposed to do? He's like, get them all out of here. So Mosier and Ed and Dave went inside the convenience store. Dave turned on the camera and just walked away. And he was like, go, I guess. And then we did our thing. As we progressed, like on Mallrats, we had a bigger crew shooting in a mall. An operational mall, time, money, people involved, and we're like, you can't fucking wait. We can't throw 50 people off the set because you feel shy to knock on the glass with the kiddies. Just do it. Just fucking dance. And he got over it and stuff like that. I don't know where the fuck I was going with this. What was it originally?
You were saying how it progressed. You were going talking about each film.
Okay, I know where I'm going with it.
I guess.
So Chasing Amy, the dude, it only worked for one day, and I said to the crew, the day we're going to shoot our scene, I collect them all together, all the keys, and I'm like, listen, tonight we shoot with Jason Mewes. Could be the longest fucking night of our lives. I said, because I don't know, we haven't had much time to rehearse, so we may have to shoot a line, turn the camera off, rehearse the line, then turn the camera on, shoot that line, turn off, and do that all night long. So just bear with me. Bear with him especially. Have patience. So we go to shoot the scene. Mewes whips through all his dialogue like a pro with like the tiny bit of rehearsal we did that day. And that comes to me and I'm like, you're chasing... Fuck, cut. What's the line? And Mosier's like, Amy. I was like, right, go again. You're chasing Amy. What? You're chasing Amy. Fuck, cut, you know? Couldn't remember anything. Went on for 11 takes trying to spit out that stupid speech. Making shit up.
12.
12 takes. Make me look like a fool, boy. 12 takes. making lines up as I go, and Affleck's going out of his fucking mind, because Affleck is a dude that loves to ad-lib, like, just loves to tack on shit, like, he'll do his dialogue, and then put on a little PS to every line. There's a scene in Chasing Amy where they're sitting on the swings, and she's explaining fisting to him. And he reacts, and then she says it's reserved for special occasions. And he says, "Well, what about not so special occasions?" That's the line. We're shooting the scene. He goes, "What about not so special occasions?" Well, he just hit her in the fucking head with a bat. And I'm like, "Fucking cut! What are you doing? We're trying to tell a love story here." He's like, "Oh yeah, it's a love story with fisting in it." And I said, "But still, what are you doing?" He's like, "I think it's a funny line. Maybe leave it in. My peeps will love it." This is 96. He had no peeps. He's like, "I'm telling you, leave that line and it'll be fucking howls. People will love it." I said, "Dude, I'm not going to leave your shit in. Just if you want to make up lines, go write your own fucking script. Collect them all, write your own fucking script." And he did that, and he won an Oscar. So Affleck's sitting there as I'm making up lines, which he knows are not in the script, and he's just like, "What are you fucking doing? What happened to no ad-lib?" And I'm like, "I'm the writer. When I'm ad-libbing, it's like doing another draft." Dogma, though, we kept impressing on this cat. Look, you got to be top notch because you are a strong back that's got to carry the movie. You got to be funny, and you got to be on cue all the time. You got to know your lines. You can't be shy and shit like that, because we got real actors in the movie this time. And he's like, "Not like Affleck." I was like, "Not like Affleck." I said, "We got real actors." He's like, "Who?" I'm like, "Well, we got Alan Rickman in the movie." And he's like, "Who the fuck's that?" I said, "Alan Rickman, you know, from fucking Die Hard, Yippee-ki-yay." He's like, "Bruce Willis?" I said, "No." The other guy, Alan Rickman, he's the bad guy, he's the villain. And he's like, "Oh, all right, so what?" I'm like, "Well, Alan Rickman is a British actor, man. And British actors, fucking, they invented acting. They will chew the scenery fucking around you. They will just, he'll make you look like a fool. And he won't put up for, like, snoochie boochies and shit like that. He needs you to be on and there for him and fucking, like, top notch. He's worked with the best. You can't let a dude like this down." So, as with all the other films, we kind of rehearse. I rehearse with all the actors separately. And Muse, I always start with by himself and then work him into the group. So I sit down with Muse to start rehearsing his lines. And he comes in the room, no script. I'm like, "Where's your fucking script?" And he said, "I don't need it." And I said, "Well, what do you mean you don't need it?" He's like, "Just try me, go ahead." So I start reading the lines that aren't Muse. And Muse starts doing his lines back without a script in hand. I was like, "That's pretty fucking good." And we keep going, and he knows everything. Bang, left and right. And I'm like, "Holy shit, did you memorize all your lines?" He's like, "Yeah, everybody else's too." And I said, "Bullshit." He said, "Try me." So I start reading Muse's lines, and he starts reading everybody else's lines back to me. Without a fucking script. And I'm like, "What the fuck? What are you, Rain Man? What the fuck?" I said, "What the fuck happened, dude? Why did you suddenly become a genius?" And he was just like, "I don't want to piss off that Rickman dude." So by the time we got to Jay and Bob, he was at the top of his game, and not just like taking direction, but actually giving direction back to me. And we're rehearsing for the sword fight, for the lightsaber battle, blunt saber battle. Can't call it lightsaber. Lucasfilm will sue. Blunt saber battle, and he's got the double-sided bong saber. So embarrassing. And he's doing his movers, and he comes back into this, and he's like, "All right, so what?" He's going, "Moves?" And I said, "Yeah," because he calls me moves. I said, "Yeah." He said, "What if I, like, when I'm like this, I turn it off, and then I hit it, and I blow the smoke out, and I turn it on, and I go at it again?" And I looked at him like, "That's fucking brilliant." So I grabbed the digital guy, Joe Grossberger. I'm like, "Can we do that?" And he's like, "We can do anything. We're putting it all in post." I said, "Genius, let's do it." So it was really satisfying to watch a movie for the first time with an audience, and that moment happens, and the audience goes nuts. I was like, "Holy shit, the dude's really fucking quite an idiot savant."
I was wondering where you got Snooch to the Nooch and the other one from, like, Snoochie Poochie. And, like, where'd they come from? What do they mean? Because you, like, put them in almost all of your movies.
Dude, you are the most timid question asker I've ever met. You're like, "I just want to ask Snoochie Poochie." Come on, with authority, dude. Get in there, own the mic. Grab it like a fucking cock and own it, dude. Go ahead. ask again. Just bring the thunder.
Okay. Where did you get Snoochie Boochies and Snooch to the Nooch?
You sound like Kermit. That's adorable. Grab the mic and say it's not easy being green.
It's not easy being green. Why are there so many songs about rainbows?
Now, bolstered by that applause, you should be like, I own the room, fuck the fat guy and him. It's me. When this gentleman was younger, circa 14, 15, still in high school, he used to run around. Pardon? Barely. He used to say things like, I'm gonna fuck your mother. Nah. And nah, the urgent panicky nah meant like, I'm kidding, don't kick my ass. So nah went to, one day it became, I'm gonna fuck your mother, nooch. And the word got a little bigger. And then it went, I'm gonna fuck your mother, snooch. And I'm gonna fuck your mother, snoochy boochies. I'm gonna fuck your mother, snooch to the nooch. And then, I'm gonna fuck your mother, stinkity nickity noinch. And then eventually went down to Snoogans, which I guess covered all the bases. But it was essentially like, I'm kidding, and it was weird to watch language grow like that, you know, just from nah all the way to Snoogans. That's the story. And what it means, I guess, is like, don't kick my ass.
Yeah. Just kidding.
Just kidding.
Just kidding.
Thank you guys very much.
You're an excellent speaker. Nah.
How many times are you guys going to come to Wyoming? We might as well fucking get it on.
Are you Matthew McConaughey?
No.
Is the question, are we going to get it on? And by get it on, you mean smoke or
are we
going to
fucking get it on or fucking...
Look, I'm willing to get it on.
Whoa!
But not...
Whoa, I think you misread me.
Maybe you misread me. I was talking about you sucking my dick. Was there a question in there somewhere? All right, here's your chance, man. Just
I totally fucking forgot what I was going to say thanks to all that shit, man.
Say again?
I forgot. No, tonight, later on after the show, are you guys going to be puffing the chronics or just sitting on your asses or what? You know, Jay makes himself out to be such a chronic smoking motherfucker. What's up?
I couldn't hear. If this guy was shaking his head at you,
no, I can't hear you. Also,
how do I get one of them cards, you know, from the show, you know? The union card, you know?
Dude, that was a movie. The hair is short, I wear glasses.
I still want the fucking card, okay?
Alright, we'll work on that. Security. Go ahead.
Okay. I got a yes or no question for you. It's pretty easy. Can you answer that? Just yes or no. If you promise, I'll ask the question.
Yeah.
Alright. Did you or did you not walk off with this tray?
No.
Oh! For the rest of you who can't see that, this is one of the most recent issues of High Times. Kevin Smith was on the cover of.
Yes. No, I didn't walk away with it, but I will tell you something really interesting. That is fucking real. They showed up at the house to take a picture, and they're like, would Kevin mind doing the cover of High Times? I'm like, shit, no, I'm a press whore. But they kept asking if I would mind. I was like, no, why would I care? Of course not, no. And then they show up with enough fucking weed to get me, them, and everyone in my family put in jail. Forever. Like, this was a Midnight Express amount of weed. It was fucking huge. And I thought it was fake. I was just like, there's no way anyone carries this much fucking weed around. Unless they're like Muse. So I'm really dumb when it comes to shit like that. Like, I'm not one of those people that's like, I smell weed. You know, I don't know the fucking smell. I can count, like, on all your hands the amount of times I've gotten high. But I'm sitting there posing. It's real hot. I'm wearing a fucking jacket and shit like that. And we're outside in the backyard. And I'm holding this big fucking plate of weed. And I'm like, this shit looks so real. And he's like, yeah. And I was like, what do you guys use? And he's like, what are you talking about? I was like, this is weed? He's like, we're High Times. And I was like, get the fuck out of here, man. This is real. You have me holding real weed in the middle of suburbia this much? Like, this isn't like, you know, personal use or like a little bit to get high with. This is like intent to fucking sell to China. Like, this is a lie. And they're like, well, we cleared it. We wanted to make sure that you were cool. I was like, I didn't know it was going to be real. Can I have some?
They gave us
like this much weed to keep.
Nice.
Out of that whole big plate.
But did you, in fact, sell it to China?
No.
Oh,
fuck China. I sold that to Muse, though. I was like, this is excellent shit. And $800-$900. He's like, all right. No, they kept us. They gave us this big thing of weed, which we were kind of terrified to have, because that, too, was enough to get you kind of, like, you know, in trouble. So we were like, we better smoke it quick.
My name is Bethany, just like The Last Scion and Dogma, which is my favorite movie you guys have done. And also, my boyfriend is you guys' biggest fan, and if you guys come to the library after the show, he will buy you drinks, I swear to God. And then I have
Let's just go back a second. You guys are...
His name is Travis, and he's sitting in the fourth row, and I swear to God, if you guys come to the library...
Did you say he is you guys' biggest fan?
He is your biggest fan,
you
I
got
swear.
A stool here?
He can... Travis, stand up, babe.
Are you a
come
student
on, stand
here?
Stand up, there
he is. All right, sit down. You gotta stop fucking talking. Do you go to school here?
Yes, I do.
And you major in anything but English or communication?
I'm in architectural engineering, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
So no need for good grammar.
No. No, it's
so anyway,
forever.
The boyfriend's a big fan, and...
Yeah, and he will buy you guys drinks if you meet us at the library after the show.
Okay.
The library bar and grill.
Absolutely. I'll be wearing a sleeveless hooded sweatshirt, and he'll be wearing a wife beater. We'll be the ones going like, where's that guy who is us guys' biggest fan?
I know for sure that he can recite almost every movie you guys have ever done.
Is that true?
That's true.
Is she embarrassing the fuck out of you or what? He's like, I told you not to ask a fucking question. Don't talk to me.
Okay. But I heard through the grapevine that Jason got busted for heroin possession on Monday. Is that true?
On Monday? No.
Anytime this week.
I don't think I'd be here if I got busted Monday.
Well, that's what I thought, but...
I ain't touching this one. No, it's not true.
Okay, that's very relieving to us.
Lots of rumors about me getting caught with heroin the last... week. Then there was like 4 months ago. I
I just get busted all the fucking time. Dude.
Who are you? Who's shouting? Is that you? Come on up, man. Just hang out with us. Come on. Dude, I'm asking you on stage. You don't have to stand there going, woo! Come on over. What is your name?
Adam Miller.
Get it out of your system, dude. What is it that you want to express besides...
I'm doing the J-Rap. One thing. Oh, yeah.
Is that it?
All my friends will understand.
Get the fuck off my stage. Oh yeah. Adam, what's your mom's number? What's your mom's number?
907.
Can we call her?
Yeah.
All right. 907. Okay. This is your mom?
What?
This is your mom?
Yeah.
You sure?
Yeah.
Hey, who's this? Are you Adam's dad? Say hi. I'm going to count to three. Say hi to Adam, okay? We're at the college gig at Wyoming. Hold on. Count three and say hi, Adam. 1, 2, 3. Do you go here?
What?
Do you go here as well?
Yeah.
No, Adam goes here. I was asking Adam. Adam is acting up, sir, Mr. Miller. Is your last name Miller?
Yeah.
Mr. Miller, Adam is acting up so badly in the audience. He's calling attention to himself, shouting, throwing his hands in the air, and acting, frankly, like he's been doing the pot. I'm going to count to three. Can you chastise your son for us? Okay, on the count of three. 1, 2, 3. Thank you, Mr. Miller. Good night. Bye-bye. Someone's getting a beat.
I was just wondering, in all the Cousin Walter stories,
yes,
and the oral sex stories in Chasing Amy, did those actually happen? Or did you just think of those on your own?
You're asking me if I ever tried to suck my own dick?
In a roundabout way, yeah.
Right. I really want to ask him a question, but I don't want to come off like a fag. Have I ever... Yeah, I've tried to suck my own dick. Not much more than you could say beyond that. And that's when I knew that I could never be gay, because I just wouldn't know what to say to a dude after he busted a loaf in my mouth. And that's not a condemnation. I'm all for people being gay. Personally, for me, I just would not know what to say. This is it would be socially awkward for me. Just be like, oh, no. What do you want to do now? You know, just don't have any pillow talk ready for that situation. But yeah, I tried. When I was thinner. Now it's like I'd be sucking my own gut.
What about the oral sex stories, the chipped tooth, the scraped knees in the car?
Nah. I'm not like an exciting fuck, so most of my shit takes place safely in the confines of a mattress, so nothing ever got hurt. But I did get wounded once in a sexual situation, but it was long after the movie, so it was more like life imitating art, but it didn't have anything to do with oral. I had met my wife, she had interviewed me for USA Today, she used to work for USA Today, and they told me there's a journalist going to come and interview you. It was actually because of Ben and Matt in a roundabout way. There was a period where when Good Will Hunting came out, you know, everyone fucking loved it. And then sooner or later, when it's heading toward the Oscars, other studios start trying to fucking torpedo it. There was a rumor going around that William Goldman, the screenwriter, the guy who had written Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, The Princess Bride, and his very famous script doctor as well, comes in, does rewrite work, that he had written most of Good Will Hunting. People were trying to take the credit away from Ben and Matt. And then there was a rumor that I had written some of Good Will Hunting as well, because I was an executive producer on the movie. So Miramax people said, can you do an interview? We can't have Ben and Matt go out there and be like, no, it's not true, because it sounds too defensive. If you go out there and say that, you know, you didn't write it, and fucking William Goldman didn't write it, and as long as you've known about the script, Ben and Matt wrote it, because it's true. I mean, I read it long before Miramax got involved, and it's always been their fucking script. So I said, yeah, all right. And they said, we're going to set you up with a USA Today journalist named Jennifer Schwalbach. Now, I've interviewed with a lot of journalists, and particularly at USA Today, and they're all like 40 to 50, usually guys. And the women I've met, they look kind of like my mother. You know, they're matronly. They're not, you know, most journalists, nobody fucking looks like Lois Lane. That's the one thing that I've noticed. I do a lot of interviews. Nobody comes in, and I'm never like, Lois, I come from a planet far, you know. Because they all kind of look like my mom. So I'm like, all right, yes, and I'll be at the hotel, because I was out in Los Angeles at the time. We were in pre-production on Dogma, but I was out in Los Angeles rehearsing with Chris Rock, because he was doing Lethal Weapon 99-19. The one with fucking Murtaugh and Riggs. And Riggs is crazy. So I'm out there rehearsing with Chris Rock, and I break to go off and do my interview, and I go to my hotel, and I wait for this chick to show up, and fucking shows up the door, and it's the person who will become my wife. It's just a stunning young woman. And I was so fucking blown away, and I was just like, what? I thought somebody had sent a hooker to my room. And she didn't dress like a hooker, but I'm like, why would a beautiful girl be at my door? This must be a prank. But she was like, I'm here to interview you, and I was like, get out of here, you? And I couldn't, the whole 2 hours she was interviewing me, I couldn't fucking not talk about the fact that I was so blown away that somebody so young was working at USA Today, because USA Today is the most widely read newspaper in the universe. It goes to every fucking country, and what you see in America is what you see in Germany, which is what you see in fucking France and Poland, and it's USA Today, no matter what they write, shows up everywhere in every edition of USA Today across the planet. So I was just like, that's fucked up. Like, I was about to start directing my fourth film, but I felt like a slacker, because here's this woman who's in her early or mid-20s, and she's working at USA Today. I felt like I hadn't accomplished anything. So I was like, can you get me a job at USA Today? Because then I will feel accomplished. But after the interview, I interviewed 2 hours, and then afterwards we just sat around bullshitting for 3 hours, and I just really kind of dug her, and we got along really well. But I didn't know if she'd like me, and I didn't even think that I liked her, because I'm not like that. I don't get around a pretty girl and just be like, I'm going to make the move. Like, I just have no self-confidence. I can't read signals or anything like that. So for all I know, she was being nice to me because she had interviewed me and shit like that. And I also went in there thinking she was trying to get dirt on Ben and Matt and shit. So, you know, I was kind of on my defensive. But then that went away, and we were just kind of chatting, blah, blah, blah. So before she left, she said, you got a web board? I said, yeah. She said, you post on it all the time? You answer questions on it? Because I'd said that in the interview. I said, yeah, all the time. She said, well, if I post on it, would you answer a question? I said, yeah, I would. Yeah, show up. I'll do it. So a couple weeks later, she put up a post. I responded to it on the board, and her email was attached to it. So I emailed her back, and we started kind of an email relationship. And then that went to a phone relationship, because I was in Pittsburgh, and she was out in Los Angeles. And so they told me that I had to go to the Spirit Awards, the indie Oscars, if you will, because Chasing Amy was nominated for 3 that year, Best Picture, Best Screenplay, and Best Supporting Actor for Jason Lee. And I didn't want to go because we'd been nominated for Clerks a few years before and didn't win fucking anything. So I was like, there's no point. Plus, I'm in heavy pre-production. I don't want to go. And the indie Spirit people said, you really, 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 really should show up. And I was like, ooh, I'm going to win an award. Fuck it, I'm going. So
Jen had been covering the award circuit pretty heavily that year. She was covering Golden Globes, fucking the Blockbuster Movie Awards, the DGA, the WGA. She was going to be covering the Oscars. So I called her up, and I was like, I'm going out to Los Angeles. I'm going to go to the Spirit Awards. Are you covering it? I'm going to be there. And she said, no, no, that's the only award ceremony I'm not covering. I was like, oh, fuck. She said, why? I was like, because I don't really know anybody in Los Angeles, and we kind of get along. It would have been nice to see a friendly face there. And she said, well, I'll go if you want me to go. I said, would you? Would you? I mean, not like as a date, but would you just kind of show up? She said, yeah, we'll go, yeah. So she showed up, and then when we got there, like, I was pretty much backstage all day because I was presenting, and then once I finally got to sit down, like, we won, or I won for screenplay, and I had to go up and accept and do the press line and shit like that. So by the end of the day, by the end of the night, everyone cleared out, and finally it was just me and her. And we were driving in her Jeep, and I said, she said, what do you want to do? I said, I'd really like to get out of these fucking clothes. And she was like, get out. And I was like, no, like, I was wearing a suit jacket, didn't want to wear a suit jacket, wanted to wear something nice like this instead. I said, I just need somewhere to change. She's like, well, my apartment is kind of scummy, and I didn't clean up. I said, it don't matter, I'm just going to put on some fucking clothes. So we went back to her place, and I got changed, and we went out to eat. Then we wound up going back to her place, just hanging out for hours. I was supposed to catch a plane at night. And then shit started to get smooth. So I can't remember how it happened. I just know there was no booze involved, which I was very proud of. Because sometimes I look at my wife and think, like, you'd have to be drunk to fuck me, right? But she wasn't. So I guess we were talking about, like, I have a tattoo. At that point, I had one tattoo. And she was like, let me see it. I said, no, I don't fucking show anybody my tattoo. She said, why? I said, because it's on my arm. She said, and? I was like, and I don't take my shirt off ever. And she said, well, ever? I said, no, I leave my shirt on in the shower. I never take my shirt off. And she's like, well, I'll give you something. Like, I'll trade you. You show me your tattoo, I'll give you something. I said, like what? You know, at this point, like, there's some devil angels show up. And the devil's like, head, ask for head. And the angel's like, play it cool, is this going well? Don't fucking be a pig. Which I wouldn't be anyway. So I was just like, well, you know what, let me see your driver's license. And she says, no, I'm never going to show anybody my driver's license. I look so stupid on it. I said, why? She said, because my ears are just popping out. And I was just like, well, I dig your ears, man. I'm a real big fan of your ears. And she was like, really? And I said, yeah, I dig it. They're like fucking Dumbo ears. Which could have really gone either way at that point. Like, there's the door. But she was just like, that's kind of sweet. I was like, I do. I dig your ears. They're very, I don't know. I think that's kind of your best feature. Your eyes are very beautiful. Your ears are very striking. I said, I'll show you my tat if I can touch your ears. And she said, all right. And I'm thinking, I'm going to get laid tonight. So she comes over and sits next to me on the couch and shit. And I fucking pull up my sleeve. And I have a long sleeve shirt on. So I'm like, it takes me 10 minutes to pull up my fucking sleeve. And my arm flab is hanging out the sides of it. And I show her my tattoo. She said, that's oh so sweet. And I said, all right, well, let me touch your ears now. She's like, oh, go ahead. And so, you know, I fucking touch her ears the first time I'm actually touching her body. And I was immediately hard. But she don't know that because I'm wearing jeans. So she stays on the couch and we're just chatting and shit. And at one point, she just kind of lays in my lap. She's like, I'm so tired. I was like, why don't you lay down? So she lays down in my lap, you know, face up. So I'm sitting there and she's sitting kind of under my gut. And I'm having to like pull my shit aside to see her eyes. So she's laying with her head in my lap and I'm sitting kind of over her and I'm just like, I gotta be an idiot not to go for it. Because I don't know. As far as I know, maybe she's just friendly and she's kind of like one of those physically friendly people. And maybe like I'm reading too much into it. And if I try to kiss her, she's going to be like, ew, no. I just like to lay my head in people's laps. And then finally I was like, you know what, fuck it. Fortune favors the bold. And so I'm looking at her and she's looking at me and I lean down and we kiss. And I was just like, holy shit, I think she likes me. So we start kissing, and we start kissing some more, and we reposition on the couch, and we start pretty heavily making out. And she starts grinding into me. Like, she starts dry humping me. And I'm like, I am fucking definitely getting laid tonight. But But the problem is, she is grinding into me so hard, and my dick is in such an awkward position that the inside of the zipper of my jeans is grinding against the back of my dick. So here's like, you know, here's my dick. Gotta be honest, here's my dick. This is the top, here's the back. Like, this is the front. And then there's like the cut here, and then... So this area right here, like, you know, under the hood kind of... You know, the collar goes away when you get hard. Here's this getting just driven into the fucking zipper through my underwear. Bang, bang, bang. Scraping. And I'm sitting there going, making out, and I'm like of two minds. Because I'm like, this is awesome. I can't put a stop to this. Because who knows where it's going to go. I've never had a one-night stand in my life. This could be my first one-night stand. Wouldn't I get fucking complain that it hurts a little? And then the other side was like, fucking ow. Just ow. And in my mind's eye, I'm just seeing it as like, you know, the fucking thing is just falling off. Just hanging off by a little piece of skin. But I don't want to say anything because it's going so well. And then she's like, you know, we stop and she's like, don't you have to catch a plane? I was like, well, I was supposed to, but like, I'd be happy to stay all night. I was like, but like, we don't have to do anything. I could sleep here on the couch. I just don't really want to go. I'm really kind of into sitting here and making out with you. And she's like, all right, and we go back to make out. And then after a little while, she stands up, and she's like, do you want to come into the bedroom? And I'm like, yes. So we go in the bedroom. She starts lighting some fucking candles, and then she goes into her bathroom, closes the door. And immediately, I'm like, because I want to see how bad the damage is. And it's fucking bad. Like, it looks like under the tip of the back of my cock, looks like a bullet wound. It looks like somebody took a 9 and was like, poof. And at this point, I have an open fucking sore on my cock. The thing they warn you about, you know, in phys ed from 1987 forward. Never have sex with an open wound. And, you know, in all those years of school and all that fucking health education, I was like, who would ever do that? And I'm sitting there going, I'm about to do it. Because there's no way I'm going to say no to all this. And she seems cool. It's like, she's, I don't know, maybe she's got VD, maybe she don't. I don't fucking care. At this point, I'm just so into it and kind of wrapped it up in the moment. And the pain, I'm just like putting the pain away and shit, trying to do Taoist theory on it. Like, to be great is to go on is to go far is to return, you know. She comes out, fucking sexy shit on. We go to the bed, we start making out. My clothes start coming off. I start blowing out candles. Because she starts reaching for my shirt, I'm like... Because I know if she gets one look, it's all over. And we start fooling around, you know, fucking without any clothes. And then suddenly the moment of truth, man. And I'm like, do I just stop? Should I stop? No, fuck it. Boom. And I'm inside. And it was like sticking my dick in battery acid. It just hurt so fucking much. And I was just like, ow. Ow. Because I'm a real I lay on the bed kind of guy. Because if I'm on top and I lose my balance, she's fucking dead. Are you alright? Do you have any friends we can call? Come pick me up. So I'm on the bottom, she's on the top and shit like that, and she's going to town, and I'm in agony fucking, but I'm like, I'm no way I'm putting a stop to it. And finally, you know, it came to an end and shit like that, and we spent the night in each other's arms, and like a year later we were married. So after, it's a very sweet story. So after we're married for I don't know, about a month, we were chit chatting and shit about the origin of our relationship. And I was like, did you know that the first time we had sex, I was sporting an open wound? And she was like, qu'est-ce que c'est? And I was like, the first time we had sex, I had an open wound. She's like, what are you, fucking nuts? Why would you tell me that now? Why didn't you tell me that then? Why would you even have sex? What are you, some kind of pig? And I was just like, you created the open wound. And she said, how? And I was like, all the fucking dry humping. And she was like, and you still went through with it? I said, yeah. She said, why? And I was like, because I love you. With just a Matty Damon Academy Award winning performance. Because I love you. She said, that is so sweet. And she got a little glassy eyed and shit. But meanwhile, cut back to a year before, I was like, ow. Ow. And I wasn't really doing it for love. More like, holy shit, this chick's fucking me. And I just met her. So that's the worst. I'll never work that into a script because I don't know.
Oh, come on.
Nah, I just did it here and shit. Because then everyone here would go see the movie and be like, heard it. He's talking about his fucking wife. His fucking wife cut his dick wide open for him before they met. Did a real Lorena Bobbitt and fucking. He still fucked her. Because his options are limited. But that was it. That was the worst kind of sexual experience that I ever had. But I married the chick, so it's okay.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Thanks for making me expose something. Just flashing on the moment that your parents are writing the tuition checks and going like, I wonder what the $5,000 student activity fund fee is for. So you can sit here and listen to, how about I cut my fucking cock open.
Kevin, my name is Jackie Busick.
Yes.
Now, we all love the few lines Silent Bob does say in each movie. But I think this audience would agree that we love even more the few dance moves you show off in Clerks and Jane's Silent Bob Strikes Back. Just wondering, even though I don't have any of the time music to play for you, if you'd show us some of those smooth moves.
No, see, this is where I draw the line. Like, I'll stand up here and answer questions like this is me answering the question.
Come on, we all want you to do it.
No, because that's... No, because that would be kind of dehumanizing to me. Because I'd feel like a dancing chimp at that point, you know? Like, dance, little monkey! So I gotta maintain a little bit of dignity.
Just for a couple seconds?
Just what?
A couple seconds, even? Come on.
A couple? No. Because once you start, how do you stop? Because I do that, and then somebody else is like, hey, drop your pants! Do it. We're paying you enough. Drop your pants. That you really don't want. But no, dancing. I don't do. I don't do dancing.
All right. Thank you, though.
All right. Good try. Oh, fuck you. Act like I broke her heart or something, man. She's like, dance, fat boy. Me and my friends want to see you jiggle. Do the chunk shuffle, bitch. This is the sad thing. Like, you know Woody Allen doesn't go through this. He doesn't get through school and he's just like, you know, back when we made Manhattan, people are like, dance! Fucking dance, Woody! What was that? Really? Let him in. Oh, what's that? Are you all right?
I'm not sorry.
Do you need help? With what?
My friend has tickets! You didn't die!
With Ren and Stimpy?
Tim! Where are you, Tim?
Don't talk to them! Talk to me! I made Clerks! How many?
Five now!
Five now? Is the group getting bigger? You have a... What? Do you want to suck me off? I have no control over whether you can come in or not. I am powerless.
Please, for the love of God, we've been paid!
What? Tim has the ticket?
Tim?
Tim? Is Tim around? Is that Tim?
Put your hand up here, Ring. Put your hand up here. Put your head up here, goddammit.
You're not Tim, are you? Is Tim around? Tim doesn't exist! We're trying to get you free. Hold on. Hold on. Take shallow breaths. We're closing off the compartment. You got tickets? Bring them on up.
Oh, wait. You got another ticket!
One, two, three, four, five. Can I? I'll take one. We have five tickets! Can we let them in? Who's in charge? I don't dare open that door. Somebody has breached the door.
Now we gotta find a five seats.
Hey, Kevin, make them dance.
Make them dance? Genius. Hold on, hold on. We're gonna spring on. Come up here. These guys too? Come on up.
This is an honor. Sincerely.
Hey man, how are you? Come on up. Where are the other three?
Tim?
Tim Rothfield.
That's it? You guys five?
He ditched you.
All right, these cats got you the tickets. It wasn't me. I said... These guys are demanding that since they got you in, they want you all to dance. Music? We have some music?
Music from which Silent Bob and Jane dance outside.
You don't get to request the music. I really feel like we did some good today.
Just real quick, you haven't touched on it at all, and I don't know how many people really know about it. I know in the middle of June you were up in Minneapolis filming a documentary for Prince. As far as I've heard, it's never even going to see the light of day, and I just wanted to know if you'd shed a little light on that.
We were trying to get a Prince song for Jane, Silent Bob Strike Back for the scene where Shannon Elizabeth's character comes into the movie's restaurant. We were trying to get Prince as the most beautiful girl in the world, but we couldn't get any response back from him. And then one day, I got a call at the office, and they said, Prince's office called, he wants to speak to you. And I said, holy shit, fucking, is Royal Badness? Because I'm a Prince fan. So I said, I'm going to call him back, you know, because I get a little starstruck sometimes. So I call him up, and they answer, and they're like, yeah, Prince isn't available right now, but he does want to speak to you, so sit by the phone, and we'll call you back. So I'm like, all right. Ring. And I wait and I wait and I wait. About 15, 20 minutes later, somebody calls and they're like, is Kevin there? I said, this is he. I'm like, Kevin, hi, I'm calling from Prince's office. Prince is going to be calling you in 25 minutes. I said, awesome, all right, bye. 25 minutes later, fucking phone rings again. It's Kevin there. I said, this is Kevin. This is Trevor in Prince's office. Prince will be calling you in 19 minutes. And I said, this is genius. Because, like, it sounds like they have shit well scheduled, 19 minutes, but then again, this is the third time he called. So I said, hey, man, just a question. Like, when I talk to the guy, do you call him Prince? Do I call him artist? What do you call him? Jack? And he said, he's back to Prince. You can call him Prince. And I said, oh, awesome. So I sit around, I get another phone call, and they're like, Prince wants to call you tonight at your home. Can we have your home phone number? I said, oh, God, yeah. So I give him the home phone number. And I go home, and I'm like, Prince is calling. Everybody, get away from the phone. You know, Prince is going to be calling. And the kid wants to play. I'm like, go away. Prince is calling. So I wait and wait, and then the phone rings, and then I get it's Trevor again, and he's just like, Prince is going to be calling in 5 minutes. I was like, I'm so ready for this call. Phone rings again, and I hear his fucking voice, and he's just like, Kevin. And I said, Prince? Because that's his name. And he said, how you doing? I said, I'm excellent. How are you? He said, very good, very good. I said, look, I just want to tell you, I'm a huge fan. And he goes, likewise. I said, really? He goes, oh, yeah, particularly Dogma. And he's like, would you like to do something together? And I said, yeah, what do you want to do? Because I'm thinking, like, he wants to do a musical. But it's not the musical that he wants to do, necessarily. He starts talking about Dogma. And he's just like, I really enjoyed Dogma. I thought it was incredible. I thought the message was great. And went on at great lengths about it. And I'm sitting there listening to him talk about it, and it's starting not to sound like the movie I made. Like, a little bit. Like, he's got, like, the character names down and shit. But then there's things that he's talking about that I'm like, well, I didn't say that in the movie, did I? You know, like, hold on. I'm going to rewind the movie. And he starts talking more and more about spirituality, religion, faith, and it becomes very apparent over the course of a half hour that Prince is way into Jesus, like really into Jesus. And if you've listened to his music, you know, he's always had one foot in the corporal, one foot in the spiritual. You know, he sings about Darling Nikki, but he also sings about God. But it felt like the pendulum swung far away from Nookie right into the Son of God. And because, I'm thinking I could talk smack to this dude, but he doesn't want to hear from language. Like at one point he says to me, I'll put you an example, he says. Because he's sitting there ministering to me at a certain point. I'm like, holy shit, this dude's preaching. But I'm not going to say anything because it's Prince. So he's like, I'll give you an example. He's going, you make movies with cursing in them. I said, yeah. And he said, can you make a movie without cursing in it? I said, yeah, I guess, but why bother? And he said, do you understand that cursing offends some people, vulgarity offends people? I said, yeah. And he goes, do you mean to offend people? I said, no. And he's like, but you still do it anyway. And I said, yeah. He's going, okay, we're going to put you over here. And I was like, where? And I can't see him, but I think he went like this. And I really want to know what over here is, but he doesn't explain it. And he gets very cryptic like that. He talks about shit like, he's like, Kevin, if a big snake gives birth to a little snake, what is that little snake going to grow up to be? And I was like, a big snake? He's like, right, and that snake gives birth to a little snake. What's that snake going to grow up to be? And I said, big snake. He said, exactly, you got to know who your father is. And I'm like, I don't know what that fucking means. So I'm like, I hear you. But he's like, so you want to do this? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. What are we doing? And he said, I have this thing coming up called The Celebration where I'm going to debut my new album for a bunch of fans. We come to Paisley Park. We have a week-long event. And he's like, and then we're going to have listening parties where people are going to hear the album. And we're just going to have a good time. I want to make a movie that we can bring to the Cannes Film Festival. And I was like, really? He's like, yeah. Something like kind of like a concert film, I'm saying. He's like, kind of like a concert film, but I want to do bold things. Like, I want to put up the words, Jesus Christ is the Son of God on screen and let them deal with it. And I'm like, well, I already made that movie, kind of. I didn't say that because it's Prince. So he's like, yeah, man, that's fucking bold. And he's going, what'd I say about cursing? I was like, I got you. So he said, you're free to come out and do this in June? I said, yeah, absolutely. So he said, I'll call you back and let you know when we're going to do it. So I get off the phone with him. I was like, oh, fuck, shit, that's fucking great. I go in and tell everyone about it. And Mosier goes, did you ask about the song for the movie? And I was like, no, fuck, I forgot. I was like, what's the protocol? Can I call him again? Should I just call him? I got his home phone number. I mean, aren't we kind of friends at this point? And he says, yeah, you might want to find out if we can use the song. And so I call him the next day, and I was just like, hey, Prince, it's Kevin. Listen, we talked a lot the other night. It was great, and I look forward to this thing we're going to do. But we're making this movie now, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, and there's dudes who are in Dogma. Remember those characters. I needed to use your song, Most Beautiful Girl in the World. I love the song. I want to put it in this one scene in the movie. And he goes, no. I said, no? He goes, yeah, I'm going to have to pass on that. He's like, you can use the Time song, which he owns the publishing for. He's like, you can use the Time song, but I'm going to take a pass on the other one. And I said, all right, bye. You know, I was like, that's so fucking weird. The dude called me up and said, come out and shoot a documentary for me. And I'm like, yeah. And I call him and be like, can I have one of your songs? He's like, no. I was like, I thought people in the business gave each other things. But I don't say anything because it's Prince. So it rolls around, time to go up there and shit. And I'm in the midst of editing the movie and putting it together, and we're getting in crunch time, and so many things are going on. The last thing in the world I should do is leave and go to Paisley Park, go to Minnesota for a week. But I'm like, fuck it. Once in a lifetime chance. Who knows what will come of it. It's fucking Prince. I got to go. So I grab the wife, jump on the plane, we go to Minnesota, I get out there, go to Paisley Park, and I meet with his producer, this great woman named Stephanie. And Stephanie's like, he's right now, he's on stage talking to a bunch of people I'm going to bring in there, and then we'll talk to him, he's going to tell you what he wants to do. I was like, awesome. So I go in there, and he's sitting on the stage, and he's very small. You know, he looks big on stage, but he's very, very small. But he's decked out, he's fucking Prince. He's wearing clothes that look like somebody just sewed them 2 minutes ago. Like an outfit, like he's in a play, like he's doing Shakespeare. And not like nice clothes like this. And he's in heels, of course, which the first thing that struck me, I'm like, he's in heels. It's casual time, and he's in heels. That's interesting. So I always thought, like, maybe back around the house, he's wearing kicks, you know, like Vans or something. So he comes down, we start talking, and he starts telling me about, like, his beef with the music industry. Like, and just, like, you can't follow him. He's going all over the place, jumping topic to topic. And I'm like, I don't know what he's saying. What? Yes. And he's talking at one point, he's just like, you know, anybody can take a song and record it. Anybody can take Purple Rain and record it. And I was like, really? He's like, yeah, that's what happened to Chaka Khan. He's like, Whitney Houston recorded I'm Every Woman. Chaka didn't want that. Chaka mad. I'm like, Chaka mad? He's like, Chaka real mad. And I'm sitting there trying to figure out what exactly it is I'm supposed to do about Chaka being mad. And he's like, so basically what I want you to shoot is people's reaction to the album. We're going to let them listen to it, and I want you to have them talk about it. And then I want to talk about religion and lead that into race and lead it into the music biz and radio. And I basically, at the end of the week, I want to change the world.
And I'm like, I'm in the middle of making a dick and fart joke movie, man. I'm not prepared to change my underwear, let alone the world. I don't think I can. All right. So he's like, all right, so then I'll see you tomorrow. And he takes off. And I look at Stephanie. I was like, can we go outside? And she's like, yeah, I take her outside. I was like, I can't fucking do this. I don't know what he wants. I can't change the world. I'm not a documentarian. He wants to shoot a documentary. Did you ever see the movies I make? I don't make documentaries. And documentaries are made by people who come up with the idea and then they follow it through and see it through themselves and shoot it themselves. And they're interviewing people from behind the camera because it's something that's personal to him. It's passionate. And he's obviously very personal and passionate about these issues, but I'm not. I mean, I don't know. I'm chocking mad. I'm sorry, but there's nothing I can do about that. And she's just like, all right, calm down. And she's like, what can you do? And I was like, I mean, if Prince wants to make a movie about a couple guys hanging around a mall, like, I'm your fucking guy. But I can't make a documentary. And she's like, okay, but he really wants you to do it. And I was just like, I don't understand. I'm not really cut out for this kind of thing. And why can't you explain it to him that, just go in there and tell him. I'll just leave. I'll go back to Los Angeles and tell him no harm, no foul. And you explain that I can't do this. And she's like, Kevin, let me explain something to you about Prince. I've been working with Prince for many years now, and I can't go in there and tell him that you can't shoot this documentary. And I'm like, why? And she's like, because Prince doesn't comprehend things the way you and I do. And I was like, what do you mean? And she was just like, well, Prince has been living in Prince world for quite some time. She's like, so Prince will come to us periodically and say things like, it's 3 a.m. in Minnesota. I really need a camel. Go get it. And then we try to explain to Prince, like, Prince, it's 3 a.m. in Minnesota. It's January. And you want a camel. That is not physically or psychologically possible. And Prince says, why? And I'm like, what is he, being an asshole? And she's like, no, he's not malicious when he does it. He just doesn't understand why he can't get exactly what he wants. He doesn't understand why someone can't process a simple request like a camel at 3 a.m. in Minnesota. I was like, well, you know what? That's not my problem. I was like, I can't do what he wants me to do. I'm freaked out here. I don't know what to do. And she's like, well, why don't you know what? You'd be doing me a huge favor if you go tell him that. And I was like, all right, I'll tell him. Fuck it. Somebody's got to deal with him straight. I'll go in there. I'll tell him. He'll understand. So I go in there and he's back up on stage and he comes back down. He's like, what's the matter? And I was like, how do you want to shoot this thing? And he's like, whatever you want, however you want to shoot it. And I was like, all right, look, I don't know if I can shoot this thing. I think it's kind of a documentary. It should come from you. And I'd be kind of a third wheel. You know, it's like you've got the crew and you have the idea. And I basically be there what? To do what? Like, there's really nothing for me to do. And he's like, well, I need you to be my representation because I'll be busy all week. So you have to go and communicate my message. And I'm like, look, if you want me to communicate, let's go crazy. Let's get nuts. Like, let's slip on a purple banana so they put us in the truck. I can do that. I've listened to that album a lot. If you want me to go in there and start talking about Jesus, I did that, and I got a lot of death threats out of it. So I'm not too keen to go in there and do it. And he's like, you know what? You'll do a great job. I have faith in you. Walks away. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm making a documentary. I don't fucking know how to make a documentary. I never made a documentary. So I go in the next day, and we're shooting in the atrium. And everybody sits down and shit. They're listening to these albums in other rooms in Paisley Park. And they bring them into this room called the atrium with high ceilings, and there's a big cage with doves in it. And the whole time you're sitting there listening to what it sounds like when the fucking doves cry. Because they won't shut up. So people start coming into the room, and I'm standing there with two guys with cameras and their Nagra equipment, and people start coming into the room, and I would say about 20% of them, as they walk in, are like, Silent Bob.
you know, like, I was the last person they expected to see there. You know, like, what the fuck is Silent Bob doing here? Is he a fan? Did he? Why is he standing? What's with the cameras? What's going on? And I'm like, look, I don't even know what's going on. So I sit him down. I'm like, look, we're going to talk about what you just heard. And I don't introduce myself. I'm not like, I'm Kevin Smith. I'm in a few movies. I'm just like, hi, we're going to talk about what you just listened to and see where the topic takes us. And so we start talking. Everybody wants to talk about religion because that's what the album's about. It's a real theme piece. It's kind of a one story throughout the whole album. Heavily steeped in faith and spirituality. So people start getting up in arms. You know, some people are like, I think it's his best work to date. I think it's like all the promise he showed on Love Sexy. And, you know, it's just the next level for Prince. Like, I love all the 3-minute, 4-minute pop hits, but this is where he's going. This is tremendous. And then I've got other people on the side going, look, we all know Prince is Jehovah's Witness. And I'm sitting there going, Prince is a Jehovah's Witness? Since when? Now? Because he didn't try to sell me a watchtower once. So he's going, and I printed up a bunch of facts from the internet about Jehovah's Witness that I think Prince should read because it's very important stuff and he should know that he's being bilked and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, all right, we'll address that. Let's. What else does everyone think? And trying to lead the discussion to where Prince wanted to go, but everyone wants to talk about religion and what they've heard on the album. And some people are incensed because it's a very literal translation of the Bible, which means that the order of things is God, man, women, children, animals. So there, of course, there are women in the audience who are like, I don't go in for this man-woman shit. You know, like, I don't want to be led by any man, blah, blah, blah. And I'm sitting there trying to keep the fires from really erupting. Somebody comes up behind me and says, whispers in my ear, Prince wants you to stop talking about religion. And I'm like, keep talking. What do you mean Prince wants me to stop talking about religion? Why? That's what they want to talk about. It's really, where is he? They're like, he's not here. And I was like, well, how the hell does Prince know that I'm talking about religion? And she's like, he'd prefer if you stop. He knows. And I'm like, well, how am I still doing? I just jump to another topic and be like, hey, who likes pie? You know? So they just listen to an album about religion. That's what they want to fucking talk about. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, if he wants it to not be about, if it wants to be something else, maybe he should get his ass down here and do something about it. You know what I'm saying? And she's like, all right, I just told you. And so the other person, people are talking, and I'm looking around the atrium while they're speaking. And there's a sign in front of the kitchen in the atrium that says the atrium, redone in 19 blah, blah, blah. And then there's a piece of factoid about the atrium that says, like every room in the building, this room is wired for sound, so Prince can record anywhere he likes. Which essentially means that if Prince is sitting in the shitter and he wants to write Raspberry Beret, he can do it and record it while taking a shit without ever leaving the room. Every room in the place is wired for sound. So I'm reading that going, that's not interesting. Like, no wonder the motherfucker heard me. Every room is wired for sound. And I'm like, God, did he hear me say he should get his ass down here? And he might have, because I'm sitting there talking to the person who's talking, and in the back of the room, I see Prince materialize. You know, not out of thin air, but suddenly he's there. And I'm like, holy shit, he's coming to dress me down. He's going to yell at me in front of these people. Like, I wouldn't. So I'm like, fuck it, I'm going to make him a part of it. And I was like, what do you think, sir? And everyone turns around, they're like, oh, it's Prince. And they applaud, and he comes in, sits down, and he's listening to the group and letting me keep lead it. And then he starts joining in and talking. If you know anything about Prince, he's very kind of quiet, solitary, likes to stay apart from people. But he starts joining in, gets real into it and shit like that. And I start hanging back. And I go into the back of the room and sit down and watch. And so I'm getting to appreciate, like, Prince sitting here talking to these people about spirituality and then about, like, radio and how radio sucks nowadays. And he, nobody owns the air over his head, so how come they can't play shit he wants to hear? You know, he's going everywhere. And I'm like, this is brilliant. Like, I would watch this. I'd watch this documentary about how a man falls apart in front of a crowd of people. But I don't think that's the documentary he has in mind.
So the next day, same thing. We're talking, and he shows up, and I bring him in, and then he takes over, and he's in his element. He's just happy. He's just sitting there like a minute. He's the robe short of being a minister, just preaching to the crowd, playing games with them too, like games where people like go to the other side of the room and shit. Like it's like kindergarten, and he's going like, all right, who believes that Jesus is the Son of God? You know, and half the people raise their hands. He's like, okay, everybody to this side of the room. Those who don't, go over there. He's going, okay, we rule our lives by this. And he pulls a Bible out of his back pocket. And I'm like, I didn't even know he had a back pocket. Because the outfits he fucking wears don't really lend to pockets. But not only that, but he's got a fucking Bible in it, a pocket Bible. I'm like, this is fucked up. He's like, we're going to lead our lives according to this. Over there, you lead your lives according to what you do. So you have no laws, we have laws. Now we want your women, so we're going to go take your women, and there's nothing you can do about it. Women, come over here. There's nothing you can do about it because you don't lead your lives by this, but we can take your women. I'm sitting there going, is that what it says in the Bible? Because if it is, I'm going back to church. And he's going through these parlor games and shit, and everyone's having a grand old time. He's in his element, and he's real happy, and I was kind of pleased. You get to see a part of him that I've never seen before in my life, and everything I've ever watched, many interviews, anytime he's done press. So the next day, he's like, I don't think I'm going to be able to do it today because I got a concert. I've got a show to do at the St. Paul XL Arena. He's like, I'm going to do a show at night, and my leg hurts, so I'm not going to do the Q&A. I'm not going to join the Q&A today. You're on your own. I said, why's your leg hurt? He's like, I've just got something wrong with my knee. And I was like, do you think it's because you always wear heels? And he's like, what do you mean? I was like, well, maybe your knee wouldn't hurt so bad if you wore some sneakers once in a while. And he goes, Kevin, it has nothing to do with sneakers. And I was like, all right, man, I was just checking. You know, why we need you, Prince. So I go outside, and Stephanie's like, you didn't just mention sneakers to him, did you? And I was like, yeah, was that a bad thing? She's like, yeah. I was like, well, does he ever wear them and shit? She's like, he does. Well, what is your fascination with Prince and sneakers? I was like, I've never seen him in sneakers. Does he wear sneakers? She's like, sometimes he plays basketball, but on some sneakers. I was like, get out of here. He takes his heels off and plays ball in sneakers. She said, yeah. I said, where does he keep them? She's like, let it go. I was like, what does he wear when he plays basketball? Does he wear the outfits like he wears now? Because every outfit looks like, you know, he's about to be like, alas, poor York. I knew him, Horatio, you know. And she's like, no, he doesn't wear that. He wears like warm-up suits or something and stuff. I said, get out of here. He's got warm-up pants. She's like, yeah, he's got warm-up pants with the buttons down the side. And he wears like a sweatshirt. And I was like, where does he keep it? Does he wear it under his clothes? And she's like, no, he's got them to the side. I was like, well, are they made? Like his outfits are made? Like, are they a designer kind of basketball wear? She's like, no, he gets them from a store. I was like, Prince shops at a fucking store? And she said, no, we have to go out and get stuff for him sometimes. I said, where do you get clothes for Prince? And she's like, Nordstrom's. I was like, Nordstrom's? Nordstrom sells stuff at Prince's size? She's like, Nordstrom's boys department. And at this point, I'm like, that is so fucking cute. That's what the documentary should be about. You know, like, I would watch a documentary where Prince is like, all right, I'm little, you know. I'm huge rock god, but I'm little, and I have to get my clothes at the Nordstrom's boys department. But that's not the documentary he's interested in making. So he skips that day. The next day, he's supposed to come, and we're conducting one of the last sessions, and we're in a very small room, and we cram about 75 people into this room. It's really hot, really tight, lights boiling, everyone's sweating, not just me this time. And we're going on and on for about 3 hours. So one guy is sitting there going like, I think this album is about how Prince hates white people. And I'm like, really? I didn't get that at all. What makes you say that? He's like, because he's singing about the devil, how the devil stole it all. And I'm like, no, I think he's not talking about the white devil. He's talking about this devil with the fucking horns and shit. I don't think it's a race thing. Really? Race? You think so? That's interesting. And I can't really defend it because I don't fucking know. And I'm sitting there, it's all boiling, it's hot. And finally, they're like, Prince is coming downstairs and he wants to talk to you in his office. And I'm like, well, fuck it, let's break the room and let everyone go out and grab some fucking air and I'll go talk to Prince. And I'm all pissed off at this point because I'm pouring with sweat, fielding questions from a very defensive crowd. And I'm like, the dude was supposed to be here 2 hours ago. So I go into his office, he's sitting behind his desk and he's playing with a computer. And I sit there for like a good 20 seconds, 30 seconds. He says nothing. And then he says, these are the pictures from the show last night. And he turns the computer to me, and I'm like, that's really great. Hey, we could have used you about 2 hours ago up in a room. Things were getting a little tense. He's like, really? And I was like, yeah. Like, there's some dude upstairs who was maintaining that you hate white people. He's like, why do you say that? I said, because he said in the album, you talk about how the devil stole the music. And he said, you meant the white devil. And I said, you meant this devil. And I think that's right. And he's just like, what did he say? That the white people stole the music from the black people? I was like, essentially, that was his argument. He goes, well, the bra fits. And I'm like, what the fuck does that mean, man? It's a bra fucking fits? I'm sweating balls for 3 hours, fielding questions, defending your Jehovah's Witnessism, even though I know nothing about it, and it's a bra fits? Like, don't talk to me like I'm fucking Apollonia, you know? And you want me to jump into the fucking waters of Lake Minnetonka or something like that? Like, I'm fucking at wit's end here with this man. I'm like, this is what it sounds like when Kev's fucking pissed. You know? And I'm like, well, why don't you go down there and explain to him that that's not what you meant? And he's just like, there's no point in telling him that. People are going to take what they will from it. I was like, well, these people have been sitting here for 3 hours. They expect you to come. I'm up there. They don't want to see me anymore. And he's like, I'll go out and talk to them for 10 minutes. You want to shoot it? And I said, yeah, we'll shoot it. Okay. And I want to get out of here early because today's Father's Day. And my kids all, my wife has been out there all week. And then her parents brought Harley out to meet us so we can spend Father's Day together. And he said, okay. So we get out on the floor. My ladies and gentlemen, Prince, everyone goes nuts. And he sits down at the piano and he starts talking. We start shooting. And he starts talking and proceeds to talk for 4 hours. He talks and he's getting into his parlor games. And he's having a great time and shit. And the guys are coming over to me and they're like, are we still shooting? I'm like, keep fucking shooting. Something might happen. Who knows? Maybe somebody will get as pissed as I am and just take the guy out. And finally, after the four-hour mark, one of the guys, camera guys, comes over to me. He's like, we're out. I'm like, we ain't out till he says we're out. He's like, no, we're out. We're out of stock. And I was like, well, change the tape. He's like, we're completely out of tapes. We've blown through our entire stock. It's Sunday. There's no more stock to get. I was like, what about the other camera? He's like, I think he's got maybe 3 minutes left. I was like, holy shit, we're out of film? We're out of tape? Do we tell him? Or do we just pretend like we're shooting him? And he's like, it's your call. I'm like, just keep rolling. Pretend. Just make pretend. Go ahead. So they run out of tape, and we're still shooting Prince. Prince goes on for another hour, not even being recorded. He looks over to me periodically, and I'm like... So it ends, and everyone gets up to go, and this is the last session we're recording. The week is over. And he kind of goes out a back door and shit so he can avoid autographs and shit. And I collect my stuff, and Stephanie, who was kind of my chaperone all week, wasn't even there anymore. And I said to her before she left, I was like, this is the last day. What are we going to do? Am I cutting this thing? Is somebody else cutting it? She's like, they've been cutting it already. He used some of the footage at his show in St. Paul last night. I'm like, really? I mean, I feel so useless. Like, I'm sitting around trying to maintain my composure and stuff's being already cut? I was like, that's great. So you'll have a cut of the documentary done like next week. And she's like, yeah, but I wouldn't count on seeing it really. I was like, why? She's like, well, frankly, a lot of this stuff never sees the light of day. And I was like, what do you mean stuff never sees the light of day? She's like, I'm his producer, right? I produce 50 music videos for him. I'm like, that's awesome. Which ones? And she's like, you've never seen them. And I was like, how have I never seen them? She's like, because they're for songs you've never heard. And I was like, well, where are they? She's like, he puts them in a vault. And I was like, for what? And she's like, I don't know. I was like, when you say music videos, is it just him on stage playing? She's like, no, 50 fully produced music videos with costumes and sets and everything. She's gone, money was spent. And I was like, and they've never been seen on MTV or anything, BET, VH1? She's like, no, he just puts them in the vault. And I was like, what? Like, in case the fucking world goes up, we'll have entertainment? She's just like, that's just the way Prince is. And so I'm like, so all this time we're working on it, like nobody may ever seen it? And she's like, I don't know, can't guarantee it. I'm like, good Lord. So she's not there, day's over, I say goodbye to this other girl who's there. And she's like, do you want to say goodbye to Prince? And I'm like, you know what, he's busy, I won't bother him, I'm going to take off. Goodbye. So I'm heading out to the car with the wife, and the wife's like, you really should have said goodbye. And I was like, you think so? She's like, yeah, I mean, you know, you were there all week and shit, and he probably want to say goodbye to you. And I was like, you're right, I'll go back in. So I go back in, and I'm like, you know what, I should say goodbye to Prince before I go. Is he around? She's like, hold on, I'll try to find him. And she goes away, and I'm standing out in the hallway, and then she comes back out, and she's like, he's in there working on some music. And I was like, and? And she was like, well, he's just in there working on some music right now. I was like, so I should go? And she's like, yeah. And I was like, all right. So I said, goodbye, I guess. So I'm walking out to the car, and I'm like, I can't fucking believe it. I spent a week here shooting a documentary for which I wasn't paid, for which I had really no passion for. It was not my story. And the dude never even, like, said thank you. Never once said, like, hey, thanks for taking the time out. That's a big thing with me. Like, I'll do anything as long as somebody says, hey, thanks. Like, gratitude's a big part of my life. So it was so weird spending all that time. Dude didn't have, like, 2 seconds to be like, you know, night, tubby, or anything like that. Or just like, I knew there was no film in that camera. Nothing. Didn't say anything. Just, that was it. And never once said thank you. And I was so fucking cheese, man. I was just like, God damn, this is why fans turn on people. Like, they love somebody, and somebody kind of, you know, does something that disappoints them, and they fucking turn on. But this is one instance where I felt like it was valid. I'm like, holy shit, the dude didn't say fucking thank you. All he had to do was say, like, hey, man, thanks. See you around. But that would have been fine. But the thing that really fucking pissed me off the most, I was out there a whole week, not once the guy ever once played fucking bath dance.
Sorry, I'm like, I had this all planned, and then I like got up here, and then it's like so much different than how it was going to go in my mind.
Does your plan involve a gun? Does your plan involve a gun? Does your plan involve a gun?
Oh, no.
Take your time. Take your time.
Okay. My question is that, of course, you're writing comic books now. You did Daredevil. You did Green Arrow. Apparently, Brave and the Bold in the future. You've done movies. I was wondering if there was anything else that you, I don't know, held in a high enough regard to put that little stamp of approval on, to like actually have a cameo in a film or a television series.
That doesn't require a stamp of approval. That requires a paycheck. Again, if you give me enough money, I'll show up.
Scream 3.
What is it?
Scream 3.
Perfect example. They were just, Bob Weinstein called. He's like, do you want to do Scream 3? I was like, no. He's like, we'll pay you. I was like, all right. But that one wasn't my fault. That one, initially I was just like, I don't know, Bob. And he said, come on. I said, well, you know what? I'll leave it up to Jason. I'll ask Jason. If he says yes, I'll do it. So I called up Jason. I was like, they're asking if we want to do a day on Scream 3. And he was like, we getting paid? I was like, yeah, I think so. He's like, all right, let's go. So we went out there, and I think we got paid the SAG minimum wage, which was like, you get paid on a weekly rate. I think we got like $1,200 to do it or something like that. And they send you a check like 2 weeks later. But we got there, and they gave us each our own trailer. Because I guess like the big stars were out for the day, so we got to use their trailers. So I was going through like Courtney Cox's panties and shit, trying them on. And we're in our trailers, and I get in there, and they gave me per diem, which is like money. They give you walk around money on a set, per diem. Brilliant secret of the movie industry. You get a paycheck to do your job, but they also give you per diem, which is an allotment of money per week that you can use to like go out to eat or grab cigarettes, whatever you want while you're working on the movie, which is weird because they give you a movie on the set and there's always somebody there with cigarettes. So really it turns out to be coke and whore money. So since we were only there for a day, they gave us $300 per diem, and there was a Scream 3 shirt. So I said, oh, that's nice. And I'm sitting there watching a little TV in the trailer, and I hear him leave his trailer and come racing to my fucking trailer and just... I open the door, and he's just like, fucking, they gave me $300, man. $300 in a fucking shirt. Did you get this? I was just like, yeah. Yeah, I got four. He's like, no way. I was like, no. So, no, I got $300 in a shirt, too. He's like, this is fucking awesome. We should do this all the time. And I was like, I'm pretty sure we do it all the time.
usually on our own movies, and we make a lot more. And he's like, no, we should do this all the time. We should go to every horror movie and just show up. Just can't we do that? Just do a day on all horror movies where suddenly like we're there and we get like $300 in a shirt? And I was like, I mean, I guess we could, or we can just make more movies in which we are characters and we get much more than $300 in a shirt. And you can keep your entire wardrobe if you'd like. And he was just like, but $300 a shirt? So he was ecstatic about that. Would I ever do anything? Yeah, I would love to be on The Sopranos, of course. I mean, it's set in Jersey, so. And of course, the true mark of coolness would be Simpsons, wouldn't it? Those two. Some people go like, wouldn't you like to be in Star Wars and shit? But not, you know. They cast Jabba, so I don't know who the fuck I'd play. The portly stormtrooper. You know? Everyone's chasing down Anakin Skywalker, and there's one guy lagging in behind, lifting up his helmet to smoke. Oh, I hate the fucking Empire. But yeah, The Sopranos, Simpsons, I would love to do that twofer. That'd be awesome. Now that I said it, I'll probably never get it, but thanks for coaxing that out of me.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, man.
Hi, my name is Jen Dudanowitz.
Hello.
Hi, and I was wondering...
What was the first name?
Jen.
Jen. Mm-hmm. What was the last name?
Dudanowitz.
Spell?
D-U-D. I told my mother that I would marry a guy with a single syllable
just
last name.
Just answer my question. Spell.
The rest of my life simple. D-U-D.
Yes.
A-N-O-W-I-C-Z.
That is $35,000 worth of education.
Yes, that is.
Go ahead.
36.
Is it really?
But my question is, will we be seeing Jay and Silent Bob in the movies again?
Jay and Silent Bob will never fucking come back. Never. See? Don't boo that. Jay and Bob will be in the cartoon movie. Like, but the live action, no way. I mean, look at me. I'm getting older. And Muse, like, thank God the makeup, because Muse looks like he's 49 in real life. No, it just comes a time where you stop, right? Because you don't want to overstay your welcome. You don't want to be Pauly Shore. And I only say that because, like, Pauly, like, remember everyone at one point was like, the weasel. Like, hey, buddy. And then one day people were like, fuck Pauly Shore. I just don't want to live through that part of his career. Like, the hey, the buddy, the weasel, that was all right. But when they're like, fuck you, Silent Bob, Silent Dick. Because what do you say to that? You know, like, all right, Silent Dick. So just get out while the getting's good. Leave the party before the party ends. Push back from the table, you know, before you eat 19 desserts. Stop at like 17 and a half. Because there are some people that would argue that we overstayed by about 4 movies. And it just feels like time to go. Plus, after the last one, what do you do? Like, Jay and Bob in space. They were getting high in a rocket. One of them was, you know. Someone said lunch. He thought he said launch. You guys are awesome. Thank you for coming out tonight. What's up?